Good afternoon, everybody. So my name is Elaine Borowski, and I'm here on behalf of my colleagues at Case Western, where it is about a, there's been about a foot of snow, so even though it's cold here, it's a lot colder elsewhere. We would like to introduce a project called IMPACT, which is moving parents and adolescents to change together. It is a multi-level behavioral intervention that intervention study for overweight and obese children in the middle school age group in Cleveland, Ohio. I am one of the co-principal investigators with Dr. Shirley Moore, and I also want to acknowledge my co-worker and colleague, Dr. Erica Trappel, who some of the work you'll see in the midway and the environmental work is hers. So IMPACT is a part of a national consortium of studies that were funded by the NIH, two different institutes, NHLBI and NICHD. There actually are four studies in this consortium, two treatment and two prevention studies and a coordinating center. As we've described, ours is a treatment center, and we are enrolling overweight and obese kids between the ages of 11 and 13. So when we were putting the consortium together, there were two requirements that NIH had of us. And one of them was that we were to focus on multiple environmental influences of obesity, such as families and schools and neighborhoods, and that our intervention specifically recruited and enrolled children most in need, so mostly from low-income and underserved communities. Furthermore, we also all agreed to measure a number of common measures, particularly BMI and a number around nutrition and physical activity. So I'm sure, as you know, in many of your own projects, it really takes a bit of a small army to have a project such as this, and we just wanted to acknowledge our contributors to the entire team. So why Cleveland? Well, compared to the national norms, Cleveland's youth are significantly more likely to be obese. In 2012, nearly 27%, that's over one in four children in the fifth grade, had a BMI that was over the 95th percentile, which is compared quite comparatively to less than 20% nationally. Now, we all know that in order to change behaviors or outcomes in individuals, overweight children in this case, you really need to engage and understand the environments in which he or she lives. So first, there for children, there is the family and the home environment, where many factors can impact a child's eating and exercise patterns and their weight, both good and bad. And then, of course, there is the school environment. Kids spend over half of their time in school, and so these environments also provide both good and bad. And finally, we know that the neighborhood influences are there as well, providing both opportunities and barriers. Our study is designed to both either intervene at either all of these levels, intervene or to study. So our two levels of direct intervention are at the family and at the school level, whereas we study the neighborhood context, it's not directly being intervened. So at the family level, we're examining the impact of two different intervention approaches. They have very different theoretical approaches underneath them. One is called systems change, and one is called healthy change. And then we're comparing these two against the current standard of care, which is basically seeing a nutritionist in the pediatrician's office. In addition, then, the participants are also exposed into a study-enriched school program that happens within the schools in Cleveland that focuses on fitness that is actually administered by our local YMCA. And the point of this was to not do another controlled aspect of an intervention, but to have the community-level intervention be something that happens regardless of whether the grant is there or not, and to see what happens with that kind of level of impact. Now, obviously, one of the biggest challenges we had was that NIH said, we don't want a 12-month study or a 12-month intervention. We want a three-year intervention. And so you can imagine they also, reminding of who the population is that we're asking for to design a three-year intervention that families would stay with us the entire time. And so the population consists of 360 rising sixth graders in the Cleveland schools and at least one of their parents. They were identified in a very unique way. They're not patients. They're students in a school that had our school district has a screening program with the School of Nursing. And so the children that had the 85th percentile or higher were identified, and then through that program we were able to recruit the families directly from the school-based program. Measures are then, once they're recruited into the study, measures are taken at the RCU and our Rainbows and Baby Hospital itself, and we take measures then at 12 months, 24, and then 36 months after randomization. And this is just the graphic that depicts our recruitment and randomization process, starting from the recruitment out of the 87 Cleveland schools all the way through randomization and the assessments. Is that blurry in the back? Okay, must be just the angle I'm sitting here looking at. It's very blurry. So the primary aim of this, of the entire study, and this is a bit of a, it may look like a kitchen sink, but I'm going to walk through it. So our primary interest, obviously, is to look at the differences between these two interventions against the controls, predominantly on these primary outcomes. And in our case, we are looking at the change in BMI over time, or the slope. But in addition to that, we have a number of secondary outcomes. Our secondary aims. So the first one is obviously the one I mentioned, which is Path B, which is the impact of these interventions on the outcomes, and did that vary whether or not and what the dosage they received in the school. Second one is what is the effect of the interventions on these cardiovascular risk factors, such as blood pressure, insulin sensitivity, et cetera. Third is to look at the proximal outcomes of obesity, which are around, in our case, we're interested in diet, physical activity, sedentary behaviors, and sleep. And then we are also looking at cost and cost effectiveness. And finally, really, is just looking at the whole series of mediators and moderators in the role between the intervention and the outcomes. And so, as I mentioned, all of our four sites across the country have agreed to commonly measure these items, and this will be really where the common papers will come out of. And so, as I mentioned, we're really interested in the annualized BMI slope over time. And so while we expect to see probably the most initial drop happen in their first 12 months, because of the dosage of the intervention, for the most part, what we're really hoping is that the students, the children will maintain their weight basically as they grow. Because I think most of you that do work in obesity, we know that if nothing is done, between the ages of 11 and 14, the trajectory for obesity is quite radical and upstream. So what this is, so although it is a treatment program, really our goal is weight maintenance as the children get taller. Sorry, I have been fighting laryngitis for about a week, so my voice is a bit shaky here. So this is just a slide that describes the sample. So we have recruited all 360 families at this point. The kids themselves are about 11 to 12 years old, and it is a predominantly 57% female. As a reflection of our local school district, the majority of the sample is minority, with about 77% being African American and 16% Latino. Similarly, as a reflection again of the school district, nearly all of our families are economically challenged. Nearly half of the households live on an income less than $25,000. Over 70% are on food stamps, and a third report having significant food insecurity. And so the context of this is very important. We have high levels of obesity, high levels of food insecurity, low income, low access to food, and healthy food options. So how do you have a big impact in this? But this is exactly the point of this project and of these four studies. And so we really believe strongly that this is one of the strengths of this study and all three of the studies, is that we have all successfully recruited underserved areas and populations, and hopefully that we'll be able to demonstrate that this has some of the largest impact there. And this just shows you how high the need is in our population. So as intended, all of the youth that were recruited had a BMI at the baseline of over 85th percentile. So a third of them were 85th to 95th, and two-thirds were over the 95th percentile, or what we would consider obese. But it's really important to also notice that almost 20% of our population is what we would consider severely obese for children at the 99th percentile. Not surprisingly, when you look, most of the parents here have similar problems. Nearly three-quarters of the parents of our children meet the criteria of adult obesity, and over a quarter have BMIs that might be considered morbidly obese. And so in the spirit of this year's meeting itself, though, we really want to focus more on our environmental variables, but we wanted to give you the context of the individual interventions themselves. So I'm going to give you a brief overview of these. So the family interventions take place in groups. About families of 12 to 14 families come together, and they receive one of these two, healthy change or systems change. And basically, the theoretical foundation underneath them is this, that the healthy change is based on a very traditional behavioral, cognitive behavioral approach. Very much, I think, as the last speaker revealed, right? So a lot of goal setting and motivational interviewing, a lot of reward systems around families making small goal changes. Systems change is a new, I'm going to pull these together. Systems change is actually a newly developed program by Dr. Moore, who's a behavioral interventionist. And it's designed over around the ecological improvement theory process improvement theory. And it's where families look at their day-to-day routines, and then they try small experiments in changing those routines. And so it's all about basically looking at systems changes within your own family. Our control sample then is just simply, our control is an education only 1 hour diet and physical activity counseling session. And so here you can see the intensity and the dosage. So the first year there's a lot of intensity, 25 face-to-face sessions. And at this point, nearly all of our families have now finished their first year of their intervention. The focus is around diet, physical activity, stress, and sleep. It's a series of both didactic sessions and a lot of triads. Some of the things they've done, rock climbing, they've done roller skating. The idea is to have families try different physical activity that they might not normally try on their own. And then as the time goes on, the time for face-to-face gets less and less, but we then increase, add the coaching calls in order to maintain the message. So the second part of our intervention is the school intervention, and this is actually the area that Dr. Chappell and I are more engaged with. And as I mentioned, it involves an innovative fitness program called something called We Run This City. And it's a program that is heading into its ninth season, and it was really initially designed to be to attempt to look at the dwindling physical education activity in our school system. Middle schools, actually, the high schools virtually have no physical education anymore, and our middle schools were slowly removing them from the curricula as well. And so in this program, schools form teams. And these teams can be usually led by a physical education teacher, but they can be, we've got kindergarten teachers that have stepped up to be the coach. They range in size from 10 to 60. And some of the schools actually will require an entire grade to run, be a part of this. And so starting in January, and in Cleveland, it's really cold in January, they start training and they run or walk up to about 25 to 40 miles over that 12 to 14 week period. And at the end of it, it culminates in May, where they actually participate in part of the Rite Aid Cleveland Marathon. For those of you that are runners out there, Cleveland Marathon is a qualifying race for Boston and New York. So the kids get to be a part of a very big event. It's important to know, though, that this program is not intended for athletes. Our center has evaluated this program over the last few years. 40% of the kids participate are overweight, and at least 20% of them start out the program with elevated blood pressure. And so we have also been evaluating this program for its outcomes, and we already knew when this new study started that the kids that participated in We Run This City, among the overweight kids, we saw a drop in BMI, we saw a drop in elevated blood pressure, and we saw an increase in cardiovascular risk. And so by including them into our second level of our intervention, we knew that we had the positive outcomes, so now we wanted to see what impact it would have on the family interventions. And so each year, about one-third to one-half of those impact students are in a school in Cleveland that have this program. And so it varies each year by depending on their own funding. But the study provides this really innovative group of folks here called our navigators, and they work with the teams. They don't really isolate the kids, but they work with the teams to ensure that these overweight kids can actually stay on the team, which is somewhat of a struggle for a lot of the kids. And their goal is really to get the kid to race day. One of the things that we also say that we love about it is they've also created this wonderful parent cheering section, and so a lot of it comes around to also helping the parents engage in this activity. The navigators are blinded to what the family intervention is, however. And so we told you a little bit about the family, the child intervention in the family, but really one of the things we wanted to talk about was our environmental variables and the role that we know that the neighborhood and the school both play as assets or saboteurs on what the efforts that families could be making. And so we've begun collecting a whole wide range behind, I'll have to catch up here. Okay, a range of school and neighborhood environment measures that we hope that will help us understand this. And first, at the neighborhood level, we collect something called the Neighborhood Attribute Inventory. And it's basically going down the both sides of the block in which each child lives. We don't know the address, but then but it's basically recording a number of different things that allows us to summarize something that the creators of this called incivility, territoriality, and social spaces. So it gives us an idea of what their neighborhood actually looks like. In addition, under the direction of Dr. Trappel, we also collect citywide food retail environment data. So we've mapped all of the food retail stores in the city of Cleveland, as well as all the parks and green spaces. And we know where their proximity is between the kids, where their children's homes are. We know where these proximity is to where the schools are. And so as we're going to talk about in a bit, one of the things we're interested in is what the role of these environments play on not just obesity, but the interventions themselves. So at the school level, we've had two level of assessments done. All of the K-8 schools in Cleveland have had school environment audits done. And so Dr. Trappel's team has gone in and they've done kitchen facilities. They've looked to see what the kids eat at breakfast and lunch, where the vending machines are, et cetera. I will tell you that we've just started looking at this data, and I think we're a little bit surprised too, but it does not appear that the school environment data or the school environment is influencing what the kids are eating nearly as much as what the kids bring into the school. And so that's our next step. So, and the last we think is a very unique component is our center does the youth risk behavior survey in all of the Cleveland schools. And so that will provide us with peer level data that we can look to see what the impact for a child. You can imagine if a child is trying to lose weight, but most of their peers are also overweight. What impact does that have versus if they're trying to lose weight and many of their peers are more physically active? Does that serve as an opportunity? And so when we are considering the impact of the environment on a child's diet, physical activity, and BMI, all of these environmental influences play a role. So I wanted to at least give you one example of how we think we'll use this. So through our youth risk behavior survey, we know that 72% of the Cleveland students stop at a corner store on their way to or from school at least once a week. And a third of them will stop three or more times a week. We also know that those that you might not guess, or you might guess this, but of those who stop, 84% purchase what? Chips, candy, and soda. Only 13% actually make a healthier purchase. And lastly, we know from our food retail data that on average, each Cleveland school has about 1.7 food retail outlets within a quarter of a mile. So that's right around the school, basically. And so, if this is our participant, and these two things are corner stores, and this child's family is trying to change family lifestyles, what do we think the impact is going to be if that's their school versus that's their school, right? So if in order for that child to get to that school, they're walking past two corner stores, both to and from school, we hypothesize that that is probably going to have a significant impact, not just on their weight in general, but how successful that family is going to be. And so where are we now? I was going to say from the very beginning, this is not an outcomes paper. We're at the very beginning of all of this, but this was sort of a design paper. But so right now, our first cohort, the kids were actually recruited in two different school year cohorts in order to get to 360. And so our first cohort is just now starting their third year intervention, which is interesting. We lost most of the intervention kids, I think, in the second year. The families, I think, now we're a little worried about how to wean them off of a three-year intervention. They've become very attached to us and to each other. The cohort two has started their second year. We Run the City is now gearing up for their third year. They just received REACH funding, which we're thrilled by. So now over 40 schools will be involved this year, which means way more of our impact kids will have opportunity. Interesting, the NAIs have been done on all of them, but we should tell you that over 27% at this point have moved at least once in the 2 years. We have some families that have moved five times in the last 2 years. And so we do these NAIs wherever they go, but just this idea of residential instability and the role that plays for healthy lifestyle is important. Our year one follow-up is nearly complete. We will have about a 92% follow-up. And again, considering the transientness and the difficulties and the challenges that these families have, to have them come in and to really stick with us for these assessments has been very heartening. And what we're now starting now is our year three data collection for the first cohort and our year two data collection for the second. And so I think I mentioned, so we are an RCT, and because we are a national consortium, we are, and because of the blinding, we're not able to look at any of the post-randomization data until all 36 months. So that's why we're doing these kinds of talks, where we're telling folks about the design. But there's a lot of baseline data and analysis underway. Some of the examples that hopefully you'll be seeing soon in the literature are some of ours around the home, school, and neighborhood environments on these outcomes. The relationship between food insecurity, dietary intake, and metabolic syndrome, which is the data, is looking very interesting. And this whole movement around systems thinking and self-regulation and the way in which to include some of these theoretical constructs into interventions is another area. And that's it. That was my pleasure. Thank you very much.